Today, the House of Commons conga. How Parliament almost modernised, but couldn't quite make it stick.
It's obviously this incredibly beautiful Victorian Gothic place, but the further you go into it, the more the kind of magic disappears. It is kind of labyrinthine. There's a lot of corridors, a lot of which are not very wide at all. Most of the lifts are absolutely tiny. You know, even if you have three people in, you need to kind of squeeze against them. Basically, apart from, you know, a tube carriage, it's probably Britain's worst place to be able to socially distance.
The Guardian's political correspondent, Peter Walker, is talking about the Houses of Parliament, where he's normally based as a journalist. When he first arrived there in 2016, it was quite a culture shock.
I mean, I'd not been to a boarding school, but it's what I would imagine, a slightly kind of grand but down on its luck British boarding school from about, you know, 1955 would look. All these kind of strange rules that you don't know you've broken until someone mentions that you've broken them. There's certain ways you can go as a journalist, certain routes you're not allowed to go to. It's very, very odd. You have on one corner a policeman with a very, very big gun, and then 2 metres down from them, someone sitting in a glass box wearing basically white ties. It's this incredibly strange mixture of the incredibly archaic and reasonably new, all crammed into this mouse-infested, crumbling fire trap of a building.
The British Parliament has always been a place that values tradition. But when COVID-19 struck, things had to change. The rapid spread of the disease in Westminster had to be met with an uncharacteristically rapid response from the parliamentary authorities. Suddenly, after decades of resistance, MPs were debating remotely and voting electronically. Then, enter Jacob Rees-Mogg.
It is obvious that people in Parliament need to come back to work for the business of this House to work properly.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, why won't Parliament modernise? Tell me how voting normally works in Parliament.
Voting normally works, again, in this archaic way. There's this bells which start to ring throughout the parliamentary building, which means any MPs who are not in the chamber can know it's time to go there for a vote. The members kind of cram in a corridor, and then the speaker shouts, "Division!
Division!"
And the process, you know, kind of carries on from there. And after a few minutes, there's another shout of, "Lock the doors!" And then, you know, there's this kind of hubbub of voices. Have 600-ish MPs pack into either side of the lobbies. And depending on which side they walk, they get tallied off, and then there's a physical count. It's not quick.
Order, order.
You know, in the sense that in Britain, if you're waiting for a crucial vote, it's probably 15 minutes per vote, and they've never had a system for remote voting. I mean, they've had a system where if an MP can't be there, then they will pair. So, for example, if a Labour MP has to be somewhere else, then a Tory MP will also miss the vote. But it's, again, it's just this traditional parliamentary thing that the expectation is when Parliament sits, they kind of dash down from their office and vote, which for some is less easy than for others. I can remember when Ken Clark was an MP, he couldn't walk particularly quickly. So his staff would always, you know, say, whenever the first bell goes, walk.
When COVID hit, what were the specific worries about how it could keep working?
Probably Parliament and Westminster was the biggest COVID hotspot in Britain at the time, I would have thought. I mean, I caught it from there. At least I imagine I caught it from there. I had what I presume is COVID about 8 or 9 weeks ago. The problem with Parliament is you have a lot of people working very, very close proximity to each other. There's not nearly enough room for 650 people to pack in. But the problem is, too, is the MPs are always meeting other people. There's always constituents coming in. There's representative groups coming in. And then on Thursday night, obviously, Parliament packs up. And this 650 people plus various members of the staff disperse to all parts of the country. So Parliament almost couldn't be designed better as a way to kind of spread a virus.
So what did they do to solve that problem?
Initially, there was no Parliament sitting at all. But obviously, amid such a terrible crisis, that was quite a difficult thing to do.
Order!
Order.
Yesterday, the House agreed to a motion to allow members to participate virtually in proceedings of the House for the first time in 700 years of history of the House of Commons.
So they set up this kind of virtual parliament. They opened up the parliamentary building and allowed up to 50 MPs to sit in the Commons at any one time.
To the first hybrid sitting of the House of Commons.
And they used a Zoom system where they installed a lot of screens in the Commons. So MPs who were unable or unwilling to be there could speak and they could be seen and heard in the chamber on the screens.
Mr. Speaker, welcome to Wales. Good morning and thank you.
Again, it wasn't perfect because there was only the capacity to have a maximum of 120 MPs speaking at any one time, which would be 50 maximum in the chamber and about 70 calling in. And initially, it was only really used for, you know, things like Prime Minister's questions and questions to ministers and stuff like that. And there was no way to scrutinise legislation or to vote. But then after a couple of weeks, they introduced a voting system where MPs who were not there were able to vote. And there were a couple of teething troubles. In the first vote, a few Conservative MPs voted against the government and had to quickly go on Twitter and said, I actually didn't mean to do that. But in general, it kind of worked reasonably well, particularly given there wasn't really anything else that could be done.
Was there any opposition to it?
There were some Conservative MPs who were not particularly keen, but the main thing was that people just wanted, I think, to try it out because the idea of having no scrutiny of the government amidst the biggest public health crisis or possibly any crisis for decades wasn't really a kind of tenable thing. And obviously the government was holding this evening press conferences, but it meant that opposition MPs and even kind of disgruntled Conservative MPs couldn't do anything.
How well was the hybrid system running? Have there been any technical issues?
There's been a few technical issues.
UK
I hope the Secretary can make the most of that question. The line did go down. Secretary of State.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I don't know if I caught any more of that than you did.
There's been probably more technical issues in the Lords.
Lord Liddell. Lord Liddell. Unmute. Lord Liddell.
Who started off with their own system. They tried to use Microsoft Teams, which is a different kind of video conferencing, which didn't work quite so well. And also, without wishing to stereotype the Lords, the demographic there is that bit older.
Muted. Earl of Clancarty.
And they seem to struggle with the tech a tiny bit more.
You're muted.
Oh, well, I'll have to be unmuted. Okay.
You're unmuted now, yeah.
Before the virtual parliament kind of was introduced, there were all these guidelines issued that MPs were told their backdrop should be kind of neutral, they should be wearing a suit, they shouldn't be, you know, shorts and a t-shirt or things like that. But it was quite interesting watching the backdrop that some MPs chose. Ian Blackford, the SNP's Westminster leader, completely ignored the rules about a blank backdrop and had this incredibly cluttered backdrop, which seemed to be full of signed footballs and shirts and goodness knows what else. I think anything that shows MPs as being people is not necessarily a bad thing.
Labour's Harriet Harman is known as the mother of the House of Commons because she's the longest serving female MP. Over nearly 40 years, she's been trying to edge Parliament forward into the modern age. So it was definitely quite weird when, overnight, she and colleagues were suddenly being live streamed into the chamber from home and voting electronically.
Bearing in mind that Parliament is so slow to change and you can't even get a mobile phone signal in Portcullis House half the time, the idea that we could actually vote remotely or debate remotely or ask ministers questions remotely, I thought that it would never happen. And I've been really astonished and pleasantly surprised. But I think the other thing that has really changed with the remote operation of Parliament is it's weirdly changed the balance of power between front and back benches. Because if you think of Prime Minister's question time, normally the Prime Minister's at the front there.
The reason we've been able to commit £2.6 billion.
Laying down what the government's been doing, surrounded by a roaring load of backbenchers, roaring in his support.
Which he would ruin.
And then at some point, some anonymous backbencher will get up and will be like a micro dot on the TV and ask a question. You won't even necessarily be able to hear the question properly.
I think we'll have a little bit more silence on the second round.
Quite right. Quite right, Mr. Speaker.
And that's been changed by the remote operation of Parliament, because when somebody is asking a question of the Prime Minister in PM's queues in the remote voting system, they have the whole TV screen to themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The hospitality and tourism businesses of my constituency of Clwyd South are vital for the health of its local economy, of which a very good example is the Llangollen Steam Railway.
They are, you know, as big a picture, if not bigger, than the Prime Minister.
And after the crisis is over, would he please hop on board one of their steam trains when he is next in Llangollen?
Also, nobody's shouting them down because they can't actually hear anybody, and they ask their questions with much more force and lucidity, I think.
Will the Prime Minister agree to extend the job retention scheme in Scotland for the length of time Scotland's government and Parliament deem a lockdown necessary?
I think that the questions to the Prime Minister have been much better, where you see people asking from their own constituency.
Does my right honourable friend see merit in this? And when the coast is clear, would he visit?
Prime Minister.
I'm sure the coast is always clear in, at Eastbourne. I will do my utmost to get there as soon as I can within the social distancing rules that we must all observe.
And you know they're in North Wales or they're in Tyneside, and you get the sense of the 650 different constituencies that MPs are beaming in from.
That's interesting, although I imagine whether it's in Wales or Scotland or Northern England, you're still looking at bookshelves most of the time.
Somehow, you know that bookshelf is in Cardiff. You know, there's something about it. When you came on the screen, Anushka, I thought, oh, that's her house. And Parliament is really not about Westminster. It's about the 650 constituencies.
We heard from Harriet Hartman, who had been sceptical about this at the start, but who essentially felt that it worked incredibly well and would like to keep it in place. Why are other MPs in such a rush to get back to business as usual?
The main impetus came from the government, particularly the leader of the Commons, Jacob Rees-Mogg, who basically announced that after the Whitsun recess, which is just gone, the virtual parliament would end and the Commons needed to come back.
We have to recognise that if we persist with the present arrangements, it will become harder to make progress in a timely fashion.
Why did they think it was so urgent for voting to be done in person?
Jacob Rees-Mogg's argument was that MPs should set an example to the rest of the country. So he's saying if supermarket workers have to work, then the MPs should do the same thing.
Across the country, people are going back to work. And the Right Honourable Lady mentioned schools. How can we look teachers in our constituencies in the eye when we're asking them to go back to work and we're saying that we're not willing to?
But the government's guidance is very much that you should only work in person if there's no other way that you can. And obviously, if you're a supermarket worker, if you're stacking shelves or things like that, there is nothing else you can do. Whereas the MPs had a system which was imperfect but had shown that it had worked. No one's ever really been able to satisfactorily explain to me why the MPs need to be back. And I think that's one of the reasons which has angered so many people.
What about other aspects of Parliament, like select committees, but also the other parts of the legislative process?
There were fewer committees going on. You know, normally you have like three or four every single day. You know, there have been committees which are sat, they do a kind of mass Zoom call, which again is not perfect. The one other thing that Rees-Mogg is very excited about is that legislation has been very, very slow.
We have a legislative agenda to get through. We made commitments to the British people in December to get bills through Parliament.
Because when a bill goes to the Commons, it has the various reasons, but there's this committee stage too. And that's not really gone particularly well at the moment. But, you know, the whole legislative framework has not basically functioned particularly well since COVID anyway.
Okay, so those were Jacob Rees-Mogg's arguments. What essentially was his proposal for Parliament to return?
The proposal was to basically end all the virtual parts of it, so end the attendance by Zoom, end the virtual voting, and that if you wanted to participate in Parliament in any way, you had to physically be there, which obviously for a lot of MPs who were older or potentially shielding or had caring duties was fairly bad news.
Bad news and undemocratic, according to many affected, including the Conservative MP Robert Halfen, who called it morally unjust.
And what that is doing is, in essence, making us all parliamentary eunuchs. There's absolutely no reason why you can't have a hybrid system where MPs who can't come in can be able to vote online.
But the government wanted to push ahead. So tell me what happened on June the 2nd.
This was the day when Parliament had a chance to vote on what type of voting system it wanted, and the government put forward its own motion to continue with this kind of physical Parliament. The only way that people could physically vote without cramming into the lobbies was to have this physically distanced vote, which was described by some MPs as the worst Alton Towers queue ever.
In the middle of a pandemic, we're spending our afternoon standing outside voting one by one like a Tesco's queue that goes on for over a kilometre.
But they had to set up these kind of long lines of railings to show people where to go, and it snaked almost all the way through Parliament. The MPs were in a queue for about 45 minutes. There was at one point a queue to get into the queue, and basically Twitter became this kind of endless torrent of MPs tweeting that they were really, really, really annoyed with this. And this was one of the kind of reasonably sunny, warm days. If it had been cold and tipping down with rain, I think their moods would be even worse.
And we're probably going to be here till it's dark.
It's a total waste of time. And I don't understand why the government can't accept that online voting worked.
And the MPs had to file past the counting desk and they had to announce their name. Someone would, like, you know, solemnly write down what their name was. And even that proved quite difficult. There was a certain number of MPs who arrived at the wrong side of the desk and had to be told, you know, they arrived at the yes side and said no.
Stephen Crabb, no.
Aye.
And it took about 45 minutes per vote, which is not really a viable way to run a democracy.
And then to cast their votes, any MPs wearing masks were asked to remove them to speak. Many touched the dispatch boxes as they passed. Of course, there's some evidence that COVID-19 survives on hard surfaces for hours, perhaps even days. How on earth, even with this system, can they keep the chamber safe?
It's an incredibly difficult thing. And they had to clean the desks where the MPs walked past.
Got an amazing shiny one.
It feels criminal to be disinfecting historic furniture. And I'm sure once the conservation architect sees me, he's going to tell me off.
And then he had the spectacle a day later where Alex Sharma, the business minister, became very obviously ill as he was talking in the Commons and was, like, sweating and not feeling very, very well.
The Institute of Directors, the CBI, the British Chambers of Commerce.
And it turned out he didn't have COVID, but he was sent off to get a COVID test. And so the House of Commons chamber had to be given this kind of deep clean. And the important thing to remember is that this is not just MPs there. If you have MPs there, you have to have an awful lot of other staff there. You have to have their office staff. You have to have security and police, you have the catering staff, you have the cleaners, and the PCS union, which is the one that represents a lot of the kind of rank and file staff who work there, is basically saying that it's an incredibly, incredibly dangerous place. And in Parliament, the lower paid jobs tend to be disproportionately done by Black and minority ethnic people who obviously their outcomes from COVID are that much worse. So the PCS union are really, really worried about this.
In terms of who voted for and against this, even Conservative MPs who seem to be complaining about it went for it. And there is a political point, isn't there, here? Because Conservative MPs have higher representation in the South. Labour MPs will tend to come that big further. SNP MPs further again. And of course, those from Northern Ireland, it's another challenge completely.
Even in the sense of if you're a MP who represents like a Scottish area, then physically getting into Parliament is incredibly difficult because travelling whilst trying to, you know, socially distance is not easy. You know, you can't fly. So there's a lot of MPs from more distant areas who are not very keen on making that journey twice a week. And again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that the way Parliament works is almost this kind of petri dish for spreading the virus around the country. So if there is another outbreak in the Commons, then by the time people realise it, it might be a weekend and you might have 650 MPs in a socially distanced way spreading it around the country.
Although the government is absolutely determined that MPs return to Parliament, this episode has been a bit embarrassing for them. While they have refused to change the rules to accommodate those with further to travel, they have conceded that anyone shielding can nominate a colleague to vote for them. And they do want to avoid a repeat of the so-called conga. So they're trying to devise a system that would still require politicians to go to the lobbies, but allow them to vote electronically when they get there to speed things up. Harriet Harman didn't go to the vote because she's almost 70 and her husband, Labour MP Jack Dromey, is older than her. Watching that queue from afar was in some ways symbolic of the difficulties she's faced in trying to modernise Parliament ever since she got there.
When I first arrived, that was October 1982. So that is a long, long time ago. And I mean, it really was gentlemen's club. It was the old boys network. And I was one of only 10 Labour women. You know, to be a young woman going in was offensive to a lot of the older men there. They felt that women should be like their wives at home, cooking and looking after the children. And I was somehow breaking with that and not behaving decorously.
In some ways, things have changed a lot. Watching Stella Creasy with her baby in the chamber.
Now, the minister says he wants to see the department.
It was a huge change, even in recent years. In some ways, I think Parliament feels as old-fashioned as it used to. You must have had some difficult experiences, given that you had three children while you were in this job.
My goodness me, that is like leaps and bounds of progress. I remember when I had my first child and came back to vote, obviously far too soon after I'd had him. And I was reported to the sergeant at arms for apparently going through the division lobby with my baby tucked under my coat. And of course, I would not have dared bring my baby in tucked under my coat. I was trying to pretend I hadn't even got any children in order to try and fit in and seem as if I was a proper MP. The sad thing was, the reason why they thought I had a baby under my coat is because it was so soon after I'd had the baby, I still was carrying all my baby weight. It was miserable to be accused of breaking the rules when you hadn't, just because you'd actually come back far too early. The whole thing was terrible. Nowadays, the young ones coming in quite rightly know that they are elected by their constituents to get up there, to blaze a trail, to do a job, to speak up for them. So the culture has completely transformed.
The culture may have transformed, but it does feel as if every step change to the process is a massive struggle. For example, I've heard them talk about remote voting for many years, but it never seemed like a real possibility.
Oh, yes. Well, you might have heard people talking about remote voting in Ashuga, but trust me, nobody was planning to do it. They were planning to absolutely resist it till the last moment. It was like heresy. When I was arguing for proxy voting for women who were on maternity leave and men on paternity leave.
We're elected as MPs to vote in this House, and MPs having babies shouldn't lose that right. Will she give the House the opportunity to vote on the Procedure Committee draft motion on proxy voting?
That was the first time the idea was that you could cast your vote but not be there. And that was absolutely resisted.
This one is overdue.
It was like bringing the pillars of the temple down. But actually, once it was agreed, it worked really smoothly and everybody believed that they'd supported it all along.
Coming up, why won't Parliament change? Peter, all of this sounds frankly ridiculous. Why is making changes to the way Parliament works so difficult?
No one really knows. I mean, it's just a very, very traditional place. And Harriet Harman obviously knows better than most people because she's been fighting this stuff for, 40 years. And it's fair to say that it is much better than it was. But it's still, I'm still a relative newcomer to Parliament. I've been there for 4 years. And it still sometimes does seem quite odd the way that it works. I mean, even the traditional voting method, the pre-COVID voting method, there's very, very few parliaments which gets members to physically file through a particular area so they can be counted. And it's not clear why a system of having like an iPad-like device at every seat or in every office to get MPs to vote when they wanted, why it wouldn't work beyond the fact it's just new and some MPs don't actually like it.
As well as MPs, journalists are starting to return to Westminster and not only to goad MPs standing in stupidly long queues. What has it been like reporting on Parliament during this period?
It's been slightly odd. Much as I might kind of make fun of Westminster, it's a very, very exciting place to work. And a lot of the stories you get is just from bumping into MPs while queuing for coffee or things like that. But I think this is true of almost any workplace, that a lot of the good work that takes place is a kind of accidental thing. So you can still text MPs, you can still ring them, and obviously I need to regularly do that. But it's not quite the same. I think everyone's missing it.
Has this period taught MPs anything, do you think, about the way they should be working?
I hope it's taught some of them that taking care of vulnerable work colleagues is an important thing to do. Because one of the kind of very, very resonant arguments of the people who want to keep a virtual parliament going is that how can parliament lecture the rest of the country on how to treat people, you know, who are shielding or with disabilities, when it is specifically excluding, or it was until the plans changed a bit, those MPs from taking part. I think a lot of MPs already know that, because MPs are quite well-connected people. They speak to constituents every single week. They understand a lot of the problems, you know, which take place around the country. I think coronavirus has shown a way that Parliament can actually work better. It's shown a way that MPs can represent the people, you know, who they're elected to represent, whilst not having to make pointless trips. And if an MP can represent their local people from where they live in terms of voting and taking part in debates, then that's got to be a good thing.
Peter Walker, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today. My thanks to Harriet Harman and Peter Walker. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Axel Cocoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.